Hello, everyone. Welcome to episode 56 of ZK Live. It is Sunday night. It is time for a Q&A. I'm still at the shop after a long weekend of ZK finishing school. It was a pretty awesome weekend. We're getting pretty good at this now. We have a new rule. We're going to be limiting to six companies at a time. Before we had up to nine companies at a time, so we had three groups of three. Now we are doing two groups of three, and so each of our rotations now is a much longer rotation. So, well, not much, it's 50% longer. I think that's how the math works. But it's a longer time to spend doing each of the things. So that was very exciting. We were able to not be as rushed because we don't have to rotate people to their next station. And then a huge change that we made this weekend as well was we put the site protection, surface preparation, wall paint, paint theory stuff. That's weird. My phone said I wasn't using it and paused. So we put the site preparation, wall painting, and the paint theory part of the course on day one, which, you know, it's just like painting. It's the prep work is what you do first. It's the boring, hard part. And then you get the awesome payoff of laying out paint. We found that this worked the same way. So in the past, Sunday has been the day where everyone's exhausted. We're doing the boring stuff that's not as fun. We've already sprayed. We've already brushed. And we've been in the booth. We've been going over all the equipment. And now we're talking about setting up site protection and brushing out wall paint, and people are exhausted, and it was kind of a letdown to end the day. And so this way it's much more in line with how painting works and how human beings work, where it was fun to look forward to today, and we were able to be energized by the more exciting work on the second day because everyone's tired. Everybody walks out like zombies because it's been so much information. And it's a very stimulating thing when you love the craft to come here and nerd out about the craft for 2 days. We got to bed much earlier this week, Saturday night. I had a new rule. I was going to leave after dinner. I had dinner and a cigar, and then I left. And that way I was fresher today too. I'm much fresher right now. Like, my hair's a mess because I've been wearing a face shield all day. But I definitely, you know, way fresher. You get better as you do things and you iterate and you try stuff. And that's when we started this whole thing. It was, let's figure this thing out, you know. But I think we have a really good system now, where we were able to, the first day we had two groups of three, and then the second day was two groups of three, and they rotated, so you got half the day at each of the stations. Much more in depth than it already was, and less rushed. It was still in depth before, but it was kind of rushed. So that was awesome. We have a lot of great questions tonight. Continue to put your questions down at the little question mark button at the bottom with the little bubble. I saw somebody just put one up too. I think most people are getting good at that now and not putting them in the comments. Somebody did ask, where is your class schedule? We don't have a class schedule posted. It's the first weekend, and we're working on that. I've slacked hardcore at marketing ZK Finishing School. It's just been one of those things where, I don't know. I'm on board 100% to market ZK Painting now, but the Finishing School, like, I don't know. It's a mental exercise to get to wanting to put in the time to do the marketing side. Right, so far, it's been organic, and we've been filling the classes, and it's been great. But we do need to put... I just talk to everyone on about every person that's come. I do a phone call with, and I'll probably continue to do that. But we do the ZK Finishing School Fine Paints of Europe training courses the beginning of every month. But next month, the beginning of the month, is New Year's weekend, like the day after New Year's, I think. So we're gonna do it the second weekend of January. I have a bunch of calls on Monday, so if you want to try to get in for the January class. You got to get contact us pretty quick. I have a feeling the 60 is going to fill up probably on Monday. But we're booking every single month after that. My job is cool. Like, somebody just commented that. I'm so freaking lucky, man. I love what I do. I love coatings. I love people. I'm a people person, so I get to be around people, like, all weekend. It's, like, energizing to be around people, especially people who are motivated. You know, people came. We had somebody from Oregon. We had somebody drive up from Florida. You know, we had people from all over the country who are a couple guys from Boston. Where am I missing the last guy? God, it's been a long weekend. But to have all these like-minded craft people come and who are and people who are trying to get better, right? I'm always trying to get better. Speaking of that, we're going to talk about couples therapy today because I had my first session of couples therapy with my wife. It was awesome. Things are going great in our relationship, but her therapist brought up to her and she was like, yeah, it'd be great. I'd love to do it. I was like, you want to get better at our relationship? Like, let's do it. And so I had my first couples therapy class and or session, and I'm a big fan, I will say. But I love to get to learn and improve, you know? Learning and improvement, constant improvement, like little by little is all it takes, but over time adds up to a lot. And I've seen the fruits of that now. And now I get super excited to be around other people who are also trying to learn and get better, you know? And I think a lot of this class, a lot of what we go over in our course is ways of thinking about things that my boss and my bosses in the past definitely didn't empower me to think outside the box. John, of course you and your wife, because John's another killer, right? The killers, all the high performers, they all go to therapy, right? It's the gym for the emotions. Like, we go to the gym, we get fit. We don't stop going to the gym once we get fit, right? And I'm a big believer in that. I think therapy is tremendous. I have my version of therapy in my 12-step program. My wife's been going to therapy forever. It's constant improvement and getting better emotionally, right? It's just as important, if not more important, than being fit physically. So I'm here to say, no matter what stage, because my relationship is going amazingly right now, couples therapy is awesome. We're doing this thing called Amagu. Really know exactly what it's about, but man, it was a pretty interesting session. The whole thing starts with, let's have an argument she's like, the therapist, it's through Zoom. She's like, I want you to have an argument for exactly 13 minutes and then we're going to stop. And it was like, okay. And so we had like the little things that we argue over. It's like things we don't necessarily agree on and we come from two different places on. And so we did this thing back and forth and then we talked about it from above and how we thought those two people, it was tremendous. So shout out to the therapists and couples therapy and therapy in general. Somebody said mindset over skill set. Absolutely. I was just talking with Phil 5 minutes ago about mindset. I'm a huge believer in mindset. Mindset dictates behavior, right? And behavior is, you know, dictates outcomes. So I'm a big believer in can we get to control? We're human beings. We get to control our mindset, right? Our mindset is malleable. As a human being, like, I am so grateful to be a human. I can change my mindset. And like John said, it's really hard to learn on your own what you don't know, right? It's really hard to improve. Like, therapists see therapists, right? Just because you know about therapy doesn't mean you can do therapy on yourself. Human beings, Dr. Drew always says this, human beings change in the presence of other human beings in a safe environment to be vulnerable. And dude, I'm like geeking out about therapy now. This is tremendous. But I hope this helps somebody. If you're thinking about it, I had never thought about it. My wife came to me and she's like, I want to go to couples therapy. And I was like, you know, the little child inside's like, oh my God, like, am I doing something wrong? Are you mad at me? Is something like, I thought everything was good. And she's like, no, like, here's kind of where I'm coming from, blah, blah, blah. And like, yeah, of course, there's like some little part in the back of your brain that's like, my wife just came to me and said she wants to go to couples therapy. Am I like an asshole? Is there something I'm doing wrong? Is she going to like drop some bomb on me? Right? But we talked and I'm like, yeah, you know what? I like the idea of it. 5 years ago, 8-10 years ago, I would have laughed it under the table because I would have been too insecure. I would have been too afraid to be vulnerable. I've learned and practiced to get vulnerable in situations. Look, I mean, look, I'm on here telling you about therapy. Obviously, I've seen the fruits of being vulnerable, and they're amazing. That's where you grow, right? It's like the burn of the muscle, right? That's where you grow muscles, is through that burn. If you don't ever feel the burn, you're not going to get stronger. I think emotionally, that's the same thing. Is getting vulnerable helps us grow emotionally, and I'm a big believer in it. Some people said, thanks for sharing. Absolutely. I think it's huge. I never knew anyone that's been to couples therapy who wasn't like, anytime you hear about it, it's on TV and it's like, well, the husband cheated or, you know, whatever. The relationship's falling apart and they go to couples therapy. And I think my wife or the therapist, I think the therapist told us that there's a stat that's like the average couple gets to couples therapy 7 years after the problem started, right? And that sucks, right? Our society is so messed up about head stuff. I don't know, I'll stop talking about it. Let's talk about painting. That's why we're all here. So I'm gonna start with the question that's not in the question box because it was too long. Someone sent me a DM and they were like, my question's too long, I can't put it in the DM box or in the question box. Sorry, another episode sponsored by Waterloo Strawberry. Waterloo, if you're out there, hit me up. I'll be your biggest fan. I am your biggest fan. Crushing Waterloo's all weekend. It's been tremendous. But somebody sent me a message. They're from California. And they were asking about what my approach is to justifying and then selling high VOC products. And I might be butchering the question exactly, but that was kind of what they're getting at, is like, how do we take environmentally conscious people who are, really care about the environment and are afraid of VOCs, and how do we get them to use, or I don't know, I don't remember if it was, how do we get them to, how do you sell it? Something like that. If you're on here and you're watching, feel free to clarify. But anyway, I would say, so the first thing we talk about, so I love Risinger Builds, Matt Risinger. If you guys don't know that guy, he's got a YouTube channel. I don't watch YouTube, so I've never really seen it, but I follow him on Instagram. I've heard him on a couple podcasts. Really smart guy. And there is, I believe it's University of Texas, El Paso, or there was some university in Texas who built a house out of modern, like state-of-the-art modern everything. And they put like 2,000 sensors in the house, or I don't know, some massive amount of sensors. And then they had people live in the house. And then they studied, how living and cooking and cleaning inside of a modern home, what type of gases and chemicals are in the air when it's actually lived in, right? When you scrub a wall, does the paint continue to off-gas? Is it, like, what happens, right? When you cook with some heat and the heat comes up and hits paint or hits whatever, insulation, and what are the chemicals that come off? And he was talking about how these low or no VOC paints, turns out they continue to off-gas chemicals, not volatile organic compounds, but they do off-gas chemicals that are probably not good for our bodies for months and months and months after the fact, right? You can't necessarily smell them. They're not VOCs, but they are off-gassing chemicals, right? Okay, so the manufacturers are like, we have to make paint and we can't use volatile organic compounds, a certain type of chemical, right? So we will now use these other chemicals that no one's ever tested. It's not like these are like tried and true, safe tested chemicals that are good to be in homes. We're going to put those in paint. No, what they did was they went and found other substitutes that no one had ever studied, and they made paint out of that. And that paint is low VOC. And I'm sure one of the things was it can't smell. So they made it so it didn't smell. But it doesn't mean that it's inherently safe because there's no VOCs and because it doesn't smell, right? Substituting other chemicals, those other chemicals are off-gassing, and we don't, there's plenty of them we don't know a lot about, right? Some of those chemicals may have been created to make that paint, right? I don't know a ton about this, But it's sure not as safe as, well, here's a list of 50 chemicals we know do no harm to human beings through massive amounts of study, and we're going to make paint out of those chemicals. That's not what's happening with no and low VOC paint. So now you start to go, well, oil, let's say, so my favorite type of paint, Holland Lac from Fine Paints of Europe. Holland Lac, it has high VOC content, right? All right, but we are professionals. We are wearing respirators. We are controlling our environment, and the volatile organic compounds are off-gassing, and they're bad for the environment. So we're not talking about the environment at this point. We're talking about human health, right? Because I'm not going to say that, but we can make the argument that you're going to paint less and put less chemicals into the world if you use long-lasting, high-quality paint. So maybe over time, I'm using less chemicals, but by using a higher VOC content oil product up front, right? I've definitely made that argument. I believed in that argument. I mean, I think, obviously, I've seen Holland Lac 12 years later look brand new. So most interiors are getting repainted more than every 12 years. Well, that's a lot of chemicals that are being used and a lot of oil or petroleum products that are being refined to make that paint. And so what are we talking about here? I think that question is like VOCs in this, like, just the lens of, okay, just VOCs are bad and everything else is good. Like, that's not the case. Come on. I think that's naive to think that just the VOCs are bad and that all the other chemicals are completely cool, right? Just because it's green, green means it doesn't have high VOC, right? I don't know. That's kind of like, there are some people you'll just never convince, right? So some people that, like, don't worry, you're not going to convince everybody. And if I have a client that's like that, you know, we'll adapt to them because I'm here to make people happy. But most of the time I'm able to say, look, I just talked to a designer this week and they were like, the client is very concerned about the smell of oil. And I said, well, I know I'm going to finish this job and they're not going to be in their house for 3 weeks after. You know, this is it's a crash pad condo, whatever it is. We're going to be in the environment when the VOCs are being off-gassed and the smell is strong. We are going to control our environment. We're going to protect ourselves because we're professionals. And by the time we turn this house over and oil-based paint is cured in 3 weeks, there's no more off-gassing, right? The off-gassing is done. So maybe there's more VOCs up front, but it is done. It's now a very, very, very safe paint to have in your house. Versus some of these newer paints that like off-gas for months and months and months and years at a time. No, who knows? I mean, that one study that they did at that house did show that there were these paints were off-gassing for extended periods of time. So I think when it comes down to it, it's like almost the known is safer than the unknown in some ways. Like, you know, depends. If you're talking about using, like, I don't know, vegetable oil and, like, ground up freaking rocks to make your pigment, yeah, that's probably pretty safe. But I mean, I don't think that paint's gonna last very long. So it's a tough sell. Some people don't want to be sold it, so I wouldn't try. But a lot of people, if you can articulate, like, look, you're gonna have a very long lasting beautiful coating that will not smell by the time you get here, right? Or, you know, for the first week is gonna smell, and maybe we can run air machines and control the environment if you're really against the smell of oil. But let's not pretend like water-based paints aren't off-gassing for a month that we know of. We know it takes a month for water-based paints to cure, right? Most domestic paint. So, and what happens when coatings cure? They are off-gassing chemicals. So it's not like we're saying we're going to have VOC oil-based paint that's going to off-gas chemicals, and then we have this other stuff that does nothing. So I don't know. That's the best answer I have. I'm sure not an expert. You'd have to talk to a building science and environment chemistry specialist or something like that. But see if you guys can find that Risinger Builds episode where he talked about, 7 days to cure. You're right. I mean, oil-based, it depends. But oil-based is a shorter cure time, and water-based takes a lot longer to cure. So the curing is letting gases off. So I think that there are arguments to be made for the overall more environmentally friendly could be, oil-based could be equally as environmentally friendly. Let's not even say more. But I don't think it's hard to see how if you can have a paint job last twice as long and know that it's done off-gassing when you move in, that it could be considered as safe as using a water-based system. I don't think that it's like this horrible thing. Now, if we aren't wearing respirators and we're mixing our paint and, well, see, it's not even like lead. Like but if we're not wearing PPE and we're not protecting ourselves, then it's bad for us. And if we're not controlling environments while we're in them for clients, it's bad for them. But I think there's ways around it. Get creative. All right. Here's a fun, this guy, a little Shakespeare over here. WW Sum. Brushing FPE oil primer to thin or not to thin? I mean, I think you're generally going to want to thin just a little bit. You know, just a little bit. And it depends. It depends on the substrate. It depends on the surface temperature and the paint temperature and the humidity and how, really it comes down to how is the paint feeling on the brush. And if the paint's flowing on the brush and you're getting the results, then there's no need to thin. I think generally we are thinning our paint just a tad, just a couple capfuls, just a little bit to keep it flowing nice and not, you know, not getting super ropey and tough to maneuver paint. It's definitely a thing where you want to try and you want to find out what good results look like, right? By testing. And then you want to know what that feels like. Remember what that feels like. Remember what that looked like. How did that feel on the brush when I was getting those good results, right? We talk about that at finishing school a lot. What does it look like wet? When it looks great dry, what did it look like wet? Right? Because it doesn't look, what it looks like wet and what it looks like dry are not the same, right? As paint dries, it looks different as it dries, right? So we need to find out, we need to train our brains to see what is primer not thinned enough look like and feel like dry, right? If it's super ropey and I have to sand the crap out of it to get the ropes and the brush marks out, all right, well, now next time I'll know I got to thin it a little more, make it so it's a little easier to work with, and I'll feel that, and then I can adapt. If you want to get really precise, use a Ford number 4 coat. That's what we do with all of our top coats. I don't see why we shouldn't or couldn't do it with our primer. We do it with our primer. To spray, we know the viscosity of our primer that we want, and we know the settings on the gun that we want because we've tested. So use a Ford number 4 cup, do tests, and analyze your results. I'm sorry, it's a really boring answer, but that's the best I got for you. This is a fun one that I do not have a clue about. Does anybody know the answer to this question? Anybody have any thoughts? I'm saying that. I haven't said it out loud for all you podcasters who can't respond. That's fun. So, Wood Iris Music. Wild_Iris_Music asks, Modern Masters or General Finishes water-based clear? You know what I would do? With the little to no information that I have, we are using a little bit of Modern Masters clear on some Modern Masters metallic. What I would do is I would buy the most expensive one. If in doubt, generally, they're both American made, I think. Generally, what I would probably do is if one's $110 a gallon, the other one's $50 a gallon, and I want to know what was better, generally, I would go with the more expensive one. The caveat to that is Ferro and Ball, right? Everybody knows Ferro and Ball is the one where you're like, well, it's more expensive, but it's not necessarily better. But that's because they spend a ton of money on marketing, right? I think Ferro and Ball's marketing budget is probably like 1,000 times Modern Masters and General Finish's combined marketing budget. And so anytime you have a highly marketed company, where's that budget going to? They had to have margins to make up for all that marketing. And anyone who's used Pharaoh and Ball knows it's a pain in the butt, and it doesn't have better performance than FPE. Or then I would say it's probably equal to C2 and significantly cheaper. And FPE blows it out of the water if you want to go to a higher price point paint. There's not a question. Like, it's hilarious. But they are a brilliant marketing company. They have convinced a bunch of designers that their paint is good. Excuse me. Their colors are great. Like, don't get me wrong. Their colors are freaking amazing. They have... It's brilliant in this day and age to only have, like, 120 colors or whatever they have. And they all have really cool, freaking trendy names, man. You know? It's great. The colors are great. I'm not going to lie. We make a lot of fine paints of Europe gallons. We paint a lot of fine paints of Europe in Pharaoh and Ball colors. But, let's be real. Their paint is... it's overpriced. It's not a great value... But back to my point, sorry, I got distracted. If I'm at the store and I'm looking at Modern Masters clear and General Finishes clear, I'm going to read the gallons. I'm going to try to understand. Now, if I have lots of time and there's big stakes involved, like, I'm probably going to call manufacturers, talk to chemists, I'm going to do tests, all that stuff. But generally, what I would do if I was you, like, this quickly, I would just like, all right, is there a significant price difference? If so, I'd probably go with the more expensive one. Because let's be real, on any project, the material costs at the most 20%. You know, on a project where you're spraying clear like that, probably, 10% of the cost is the clear. The rest is all your prep. Somebody said goodnight from Portugal. What's good, buddy? I've never been to Portugal. One day. Level 10 said you can't match Pharaoh and Ball color to other brands. All right, that's a great point, right? That's what they say. And they're probably not wrong. But guess what? If you were to get like 5 gallons of Pharaoh and Ball in the same color, and you did a drawdown, now this is from other people's experience, so I could be talking out of the side of my ears. But I mean, whatever, this is my show. I'm talking. But from what I understand, again, their uniformity of color is not what they're known for gallon to gallon. Word on the street is gallon to gallon, their paint is not always exactly the same. So when we have clients who say they want a Pharaoh and Ball color, I say, what do you mean? What color do you want? Do you want, I have a gallon of Pharaoh and Ball paint, and it's on a surface, and I want that exact color? Do you have a color swatch that you're holding, and you want that color? Do you have a piece of wallpaper from Pharaoh and Ball, and you want the color that's in the wallpaper? That's another genius marketing thing they have, is that it's brilliant. Their wallpaper has the same color as their paint. Like, who wouldn't want to say my trim is painted with the same exact color that's on that wallpaper? That's a beautiful thing. Designers love that stuff. But oftentimes, they're like, well, I like that color swatch. Okay. And most of the time, they're like, I just like the color. I can't tell you how many jobs I've done where they're like, I just like the color. Like, and we just make, they make the paint in fine paints. No one ever goes, let me go look at that color chart and see if it matches up to that paint on that door. They look at the door, they're like, I love the color, or the sample that I make them. They go, I love that color. That color looks beautiful, right? That's most of the time anyway. Most of our clients are just like, I like that color. They're not insanely particular. They're not trying to match it to something else that's touching. And so you make them a sample board of a sample quart or a sample 0.5 liter of FPE made in whatever they call it, rails. Is it rails? The black. Poles or rails or something. And then you break them the sample and he's like, do you like that? Like, what do you think about this? Now, some of them might be like, well, I have this, like, I don't know, I have this handrail over here. I have this piece of what furniture I had painted in the exact paint. Like, I need you to match that. And in that case, it's definitely a little different. And maybe you end up using Pharaoh and Ball because they are so in love with the exact Pharaoh and Ball paint on that piece of cabinetry or furniture that it's not worth going through the hassle. And you charge a little more to use Pharaoh and Ball because it's a pain in the butt. But most of the time, I think you can just say, what's the color that you really care about? How much are you how specific to this is it? This color swatch, because if you have a color swatch from Faro and Ball, word on the street is you could get 5 gallons of paint, do five drawdowns, and one of them might be exact to that color. Now, again, I could be wrong, but from what I understand, it's not the most precise thing in the world. So the question becomes, how particular are the clients and what are we actually matching? And so then you go from there. So I don't know how I went down that rabbit hole from that Modern Masters question. But my man Dan from ZK Painting, he says General Finishes is better than sign, the little Pac-Man sign, better than Masters, Modern Masters. So that's Dan. I trust him. I don't have, like, I've never done any A-B testing. So, like, if you really want to know the answer, get 2 gallons and put them to the test and see what happens. Like, there's no better way than that. If you don't box Faro and Ball, you are screwed for touch-ups. Yes, that's the point, right? If we ordered paint from Faro and Ball and got 10 gallons of paint in the same color, and we did 10 drawdowns, from what I hear, you might get 7 different colors. Shades of the same color, right? Very tiny. But when people don't like the color match to Faro and Ball, it's a very tiny shade difference too. So the question is, how badly do you love and what is it that you love? Is it the swatch? Is it the gallon of paint you already have on a surface? Is it the wallpaper? What is it? And then we can go from there. And if you're going to switch people away from the color they chose in that thing, I would highly recommend making the sample and the paint you plan to use. Because I've had it happen, you do it, and they're like, that's not the color. It's slightly more greenish of a green, or it's slightly more bluish of a green, or whatever, right? So make sure they sign off on a sample board before you paint the whole room, or a whole house worth of trim, or, you know, a gloss room. That'd be really crazy to do without getting signed off on. Let's see, a guy named Mick Maynard asks, what are the best brushes for high gloss fine paints of Europe? Depends on what you're trying to do. You're trying to get a traditional brush finish, which we just finished doing on that Westerly project where the client, we did 3 rounds of samples to get enough brush strokes so that they felt like it was a traditional European style brush finish, like the house had been there for a long time. In that case, we use the brushes that Fine Paints of Europe sells. Those are traditional brushes that are going to leave you a traditional brush finish with a much more pronounced brush stroke. If you're looking to minimize your brush stroke and get as close to sprayed finish as you can, we would call that a modern brushed finish. There are some brushes that are sold at Michael's. That's what we use a lot. Craftmaster or something. Phil has it on his page. Go look at Phil. Scroll down past all his awesome posts, and eventually you'll see a picture of brushes, cheap brushes in a little package from Michael's. We're going to be making ZK brushes. We're going to be making our version of those brushes. They're going to be ZK brushes. They'll be on sale for $100 a brush on my page, because you know how Instagram is loving everybody buying things now. So we're going to take those $3 brushes. We're going to dip them in navy blue, ZK navy blue, brilliant. And we're going to sell them for $100 a piece. I'm sure they'll sell out day one, because once it has ZK navy blue, we all know it's going to lay out gloss better, and definitely $97 better. Oh no, I'm just kidding. But I seriously texted Phil. We're gonna try to buy them in bulk and throw them away at the end of every day, because they're $2 or $3 brushes, and the amount of thinner it takes to clean out a brush, it's probably easier with these types of brushes to just chuck them and get a new one for the next job. And I was like, dude, we should just take a bunch of them, dip them in navy. Someone suggested this to me. I don't remember who it was, how it happened. We were talking at dinner last night. But I was like, dude, it'd be cool if we had a bunch of navy handles on those craft brushes. They won't be for sale. And $100 would be a little bit above market value, I would think. Someone named Mitchell the Builder, he said, do you have a course? I want to level up my paint game, but I don't know where to start. So many painting companies, types of paint, finishes, etc. Absolutely. We have a company, a side organization that we call ZK Finishing School. I'm still sitting here at the... I'm wearing my ZK Finishing School. How awesome is this logo? I'm a big fan of this logo. I could never even come up with it. This was 99 designs all day. But ZK Finishing School on Instagram, there's an email address there. Send me an email. We'll connect. We'll talk. And maybe we can go from there. Back to the good paint. How was finishing school? Yeah, we just gave Pharaoh and Ball one heck of a amount of play here. Because where everybody knows, Fine Paints is where my heart is. They're just an amazing company, amazing paint. We love it. Our clients, most of all, our clients love the paint, and that's why we use it. Finishing school went amazing, Mikey. Mikey's been to two of our courses at finishing school. We have a sales and marketing course that we are planning another one. I'm waiting to hear more people reach out. You know, we'll see. But, man, I'm drinking a lot of seltzer. 24 karat gold, good craft brushes. Oh, that guy was a plant. That's my. I'm sitting here on my phone typing up Mitch the Builder, and I'm asking this like, "Hey, do you guys teach painting? It'd be really cool if you did, man." No, that guy was not a plant. He was a real person. I promise. Tim Seaton painting. I hope you can make it to one of our classes too. We have a lot of fun. A massive amount of knowledge has passed. So I'm gonna post the picture again. We had to bring someone drove away. I realized we dropped the ball. We didn't take a class photo, but we got Rick to turn around. He came back. We took a class photo again. Phil was the photographer. So if you guys don't like the picture, blame Phil. But we took another class picture. I'm going to post again, class picture, the people who were there. If you're curious, I still, because it's new, like, I don't know what it is, but I'm like not trying to hype it up that much. I think it's great. We're asking for lots of feedback. I think we had a ton of value, but I'd much rather you reach out to the people who've been to the course and have them share their experiences. I should do some like, what do they call those, secret shoppers, or, oh, there's a word for it, right? Like ghost shoppers or something. There's a word. I should have people just reach out and ask, like, "Hey, man, my name's Timmy, and I was thinking about coming to ZK Finishing School. What do you think?" Because I just want to know so we can be better. But I'm pretty sure I'm confident we're adding a lot of value. I'm confident we're doing the best that we can to add a lot of value. I think this weekend went even better than the weekend before, which went better than the weekend before, because we're iterating and we're trying to get better every day, just like we do in our painting company, right? Mike Betts Ski. I don't know who that is. But yeah, it's a great weekend, and I really think we're dialing it in. let's see. We're out of questions, guys. Look out. I'm going to start ranting about random topics. If you don't ask any more questions. Let's see. I don't even know. There's so many things going on. Let's see. Oh, Jason, the apprentice Jason, who's been going to school since the summer. He's been in college. He's back working for his break a little bit. So it's awesome to have Jason back. Jason is an amazing apprentice, amazing guy, absolute hustler. He works his butt off, like everyone does. Like, it's amazing. Do you guys ever use a moisture meter for cabinet refinishing? No. That's an interesting question. I have never used a moisture meter for cabinet refinishing. Do you think that water got in somehow? Do you think there's, I mean, if there's a bunch of paint failure and the wood seemed wet, maybe. But I'm not certain why we would need to test for moisture in our cabinets. Step one of of every cabinet. I mean, we're assuming that our clients are controlling the environments of their homes that their cabinets are in. And it, if there was like a monsoon and it rained on their cabinets, they should have closed their windows. No, I haven't, man. Honestly, I don't know. If you have a reason to suspect something is up, maybe do it. But generally, I don't think you probably should need to worry about that. But that was interesting. Oh, I see what you're saying. He said, I'm worried about the cleaning solution getting in. Then we soak them when we clean them. Ooh, I wouldn't soak them, bro. Or gal, or I wouldn't soak them, honestly. I think that soaking wood is a bad idea all around. I think that that's why they talk about like dipping, when you take like entry doors and you dip them in the chemical to strip the paint, like that's not best practice anymore. I think they found that that like hurts the glue joints, and like you really, it's best practice not to submerge wood in liquid and then coat it later. That's, I would chill with that. With that, I would try to, I don't know, approach it a little bit differently. That's a ballsy move, my friend. I'm picturing you're like one of those like at like commercial, like at a restaurant, how they have those like Tupperware, big Tupperwares, like filling that with like soapy water and like scrubbing away, like. Dude, I get what you're going for, but please don't do that anymore. That's going to cause you issues because, yeah, dude, we don't want moisture in our wood. And a cabinet coating is not a waterproof coating. And so just because it's pre-painted, it doesn't mean you can submerge that stuff and not have issues. So, yeah, I would definitely be very... he said, not really soak them, just spray a lot of crud cutter on them. Okay. Woo! Dude, I'm picturing you submerging cabinet doors underwater, and I'm thinking, we gotta get this guy's head checked. Alright. Still, you know, be careful with it. If you think you've soaked them too much, you know, don't rush the process. There's nothing, you will never regret testing something, ever, right? You will never be like, wow, man, I spent 5 minutes and poked it with a moisture meter, and now I've wasted 5 minutes of my life. Like, no, come on. So, yeah, I would test it, and I would try to figure out ways to not completely soak things, especially wood, you know. And if you do, then I would try to let them dry out. But thanks for the laugh. I have an awesome visual now. If I can think of it, maybe I'll make a spoof story where we take a vat of some water and a bad cabinet door and we soak it and scrub it. It'd be pretty funny. We can say DiBiase Painting said, a couple months ago, you warned me about not brushing out Eco Brilliant. 5 coats later, we had to pull out and spray in the shop. Lesson learned. My man. I'm sorry that you had to do that, but thank you for reaffirming my decision-making a long time ago, because I don't remember saying that, but it is not an easy thing to do. So, you guys ever get that? Sometimes I am really happy when the world confirms things that I had my suspicions already, right? You're like, oh. So, you know when you think something's off? You're like, well, that didn't add up. And then it turns out it was the other way around, and you're like, all right, the world, all is good with the universe. It is the way I thought it was. I'm sorry to hear that, man. I'm sorry you had to learn that lesson. So what you just got was knowledge, my friend. I'm a big fan of this. So my friend DiBiase Painting, he has knowledge now of how difficult it is to brush Eco Brilliant. I tried to give him wisdom. I tried to let him learn from my mistakes. But it's really hard to practice wisdom. Let's be real. How many of us get to do it? If you get to do it once a week, you're killing the game, right? Because as humans, a lot of times we need to be smacked in the face with the answer before we can actually adapt. The really, really wise ones are the ones who can listen to other people's mistakes and learn from them. So maybe somebody can hear that story from DiBiase and maybe learn from some of my mistakes and not have to make them, or learn from that specific one. And if you're going to brush Eco Brilliant, especially in dark colors, but if you're going to brush Eco Brilliant, you better know what you're doing, and you better practice, and you better use some general finishes extender, and you better get good. Don't do it on a job site out of nowhere. You'll be let down. It's a tough, tough thing to do. It's not an easy product. So, hey, thanks for sharing, DiBiase. I appreciate you being vulnerable. What do they call that? Callback in comedy? Is it callback to earlier in the episode when we were talking about my couples therapy thing with my wife? Freaking awesome. So I appreciate you sharing that. I'm sorry you had to go through it. I'm really sorry. I hope you can learn from this one, though. Sounds like I warned you not to do it. You tried 5 times before you gave up. Man, I get it. I've been there. No judgment. But man, that is some bullheadedness right there. 5 times? Good for you, sir. I hope you learn. He said he learned his lesson. And he said ha ha, so I felt like I could poke fun of him. See, Wet Paint said, if you want to go... Should I read these out loud before I read them? If you want to go random, my daughters bought me Crocs for my birthday, and they are ZK Navy Blue. I'm convinced you put them onto it. Mikey! I can assure you I did not put anybody up to buying ZK Navy Crocs, but we have patented the color, so I'm going to need a kickback from Crocs if they're selling ZK Navy. Can anyone here who follows Wet Paint Connecticut, Mikey, can any of us picture Mikey in Crocs? This guy wears freaking... Well, actually, we can. What are we saying? He wears the ugliest shoes on the planet. Those freaking... those Yeezys that everybody loves. I just think they're ugly. I like to make fun of him for it. But I know they're cool shoes and people like them. But so he wears ugly shoes and now he's wearing ugly Crocs. It's funny. And I love the guy, so I can make fun of him. Let's see. It's a problem with this. You miss all the comments when you stop at one comment. Usually leave them 2 days. So our friend who was soaking, quote unquote soaking, but not actually soaking, turns out. He said he Instagram just said pause because you weren't using the app. I'm clearly using the app, Instagram. Can't you hear me? He said, I usually use them for 2 days after I clean them before priming. Dude, I think you might want to look into a less water-based... I don't know, dude. I haven't cleaned the kitchen cabinet in a long, long time. So I don't really know how we do it. But send Dan a DM. Take some crud cutter and a Scotch-Brite. Scrub that. Take a damp rag, wipe it, white one, see what comes off. If you get that clean and then you sand for adhesion, like, I think you're probably good. I don't think I'd be soaking that. Waiting 2 days after you clean cabinets, man, that's kills production. So maybe rethink the way you're cleaning the cabinets. Try to do some things that require less moisture, maybe less excessive moisture. But hey, like, back to the original question, take the moisture meter, test it. Maybe you're waiting 2 days for nothing. But I would imagine there are ways that we are doing it and other guys are doing it to clean without soaking the wood in the cabinet. But it's an interesting thought experiment. Oh man. My friend, DiBiase says it was impossible to brush, not difficult. Legit impossible. That's word for word. He just read it. All right. Well, that's interesting that you say that. Because Phil, I haven't scrolled down. Phil did comment right after this, so I should look and see what he said. He said impossible challenge accepted. But Phil and I were just talking about how he's going to be doing Eco Brilliant samples in his basement. And I Also, as say talking about that, I said that's why I've stayed far away from it, because I'm afraid of Eco Brilliant. I'll say it. I'm vulnerable. We're talking about vulnerability tonight. I'm vulnerable tonight, guys. I'm afraid of Eco Brilliant. I'm afraid of it because I haven't put the time into it. Could I get it down? Do I feel like I have the skill set? First of all, I'm not trying to master any more painting. I want my team. I don't want to be the best painter in my company. I want my team to master painting, and I'm empowering them to do that, right? That's awesome. But I will also say, first of all, I'm good at talking people away from Eco Brilliant and into Hollow Knight Brilliant, right? Because I think it's better in a bunch of ways. And I found ways to talk most places. Now, I know there are some towers in the city that will not allow oil. I would still want to have a referendum and see if I can convince them to let me use oil if I controlled the environment properly. But I understand maybe they wouldn't let me. And in that case, maybe we would end up having to spend the time to get Eco Brilliant going. A lot of people there are guys who have done it. Peter Bocan from Skyline, who was on my feed today spraying that door when he came to our shop. That man, if you want to know about Eco, don't bug the guy. He's a busy dude. He just had a little baby, super cute little kid. He has an awesome wife. But if you want to see Eco Brilliant applied at a high level, that guy's done it. I know people have done it, but I have chosen to stay away from it because I am afraid of it on some level. It seems like it doesn't have a huge payoff for me today, right? It has an 85 degrees of sheen when it dries, not 98, so it's not as shiny, so the payoff's not as awesome. So I would have a harder time getting someone to probably or feel good about charging someone what it costs for me to do a door and use Eco. I just don't have a lot of interest in using Eco as long as Hollow Knight exists. I'll stop talking about this topic, but it is really hard. I want to know how much water and how much General Finish Extender did you use, and how much did you work that paint? Because if you're using Eco and you are working that paint, you're in for a disaster. And if you're not using water, a little bit of heat and a little bit of water, or a little bit of heat, a little bit of water, a little bit of General Finish Extender, from what I understand, you're going to have some issues. But I have seen some top secret video of my friend Paja, Peter Bocan. I've seen some top secret video that was not for the public's eyes of that man brushing out Eco Brilliant. And it is a brilliant sight to see. That guy is a freaking man. But you know how I did it? He put the hours in testing. So DiBiase, next time, at the end of the day, listen to me. Always listen to me. No. Or just test before you go to the site and try to do the work. Oh, man. Mikey said he asked for Flofers and he got Crocs. Oh, that hurts my soul, man. I love my Flofers. I just got a fresh pair. Kind of annoyed that the size 8s are kind of squeezing my feet. So on accident, I got size 8s the first time. They must have squeezed my feet then, but they broke them in and they fit like a glove. And I got a new set of size 8s and I probably need a size 9. The sizes for these loafer things, they're bizarre. You have to try them on to find out. Mikey said you could power wash your... Mikey must power wash his cabinets. That's how he's getting that awesome... TSP substitute with no rinse. That's what Dan said. Everyone, I'm joking. Don't power wash. All right. Sorry, guys. I take that back. Don't power wash your cabinets. If they're dirty enough, you need to power wash them. Phil said you should replace them. Our friend Kendall. Did anybody see Kendall's post today? Dude, Kendall, I love you, man. That is a like-minded individual. He would... Dude, you should... Come on, rethink that offer. Come work for us, buddy. Dude, I love it, man. Do I think it was a little overboard? Yeah, I think I do. But I think I love your style, man. This guy masked off the styles and the rails on a... What is that, a 6-panel door? Maybe an 8... Why do I feel like that's an 8-panel door? don't know. It was a lot of tape. But this man prepped the crap out of a door and brushed oil primer on and masked all the stiles in the rails. And then he rolled and tipped the stiles in the rails, I believe. Just the dedication to the craft, my friend. But I think for your first coat of primer, I don't know. I'm sure you're testing stuff. I know you're fucking testing stuff. That's how you think. But I thought that tape was a little overboard, but I loved it. Maybe it wasn't. I don't know. I wasn't there. Is there any paint like Fine Paints of Europe in Canada? Said in text painting. Heck yeah, there is. It's called Fine Paints of Europe. It's sold in Canada, my friend. And they will ship to Canada, my friend. So, again, call up Emmett, Charlie, D. They're all at Fine Paints of Europe. They're all my friends. They're all amazing. It's so cool. There's like six people in the entire company. Call up Fine Paints of Europe. Talk to them. Tell them where you're at. Probably they ship you paint, but there are some dealers in Canada. So you can definitely get it in Canada. Yep. Dan said there's a TSP substitute that requires rinsing. Other is labeled no rinse necessary and works well. There's no substitute to cleaning it real well and then giving it a good scuff before you put your good super duper primer on. Oh, we have a new question. Ooh, it's from our man, Kendall Friesen from Friesen Fine Finishes. A ZK Finishing School alumni. And an absolute beast of a painter. Young painter, too. Young guy. Up and comer. Look out. All right. Kendall, I didn't question you like that. I love it, man. You were doing exactly what we talk about. You were practicing for the big game. Kendall said, I'm going to take this down. We'll put it back up. Kendall said, I was trying to paint it like I would paint the top coat. The masking took 3 minutes, maybe. Dude, I freaking love you, bro. That's how, I love that way of thinking. Take a little bit of time. Practice for the big game. Simulate what it's going to be like on game day when you're shooting the free throw. And it's the end of the day, right? Like, you know, in basketball practice, we used to like have to, you know, you have to like run a bunch. You like run suicides and then go shoot free throws, right? Because it simulates shooting free throws at the end of the game when you're tired and your heart rate's racing, right? You don't just like calmly start shooting free throws at the beginning of practice. Oh, look at me. I'm crushing them. My heart rate's freaking 60 or 40 or whatever healthy heart rates are. I love that idea of practicing, simulating what it's going to be like so that you can get a better understanding and dial in your process. He was dialing in his process for final coat, which I'm sure would, what he's going to be doing is a number of coats away. Lots of work is going to happen before that. But he took the opportunity. He was thinking ahead. He was thinking, right? Big piece of what we talk about at ZK Finishing School. He was thinking ahead, and he was simulating final coat and how he would approach it while he did his first coat of primer. Dude, what's your schedule on that one? How many coats of primer? How many coats of what? Let us know what your schedule is. And maybe that schedule actually has to do with this question. I'm going to put it back up. I didn't read it yet. Best practice with Swedish putty. Why is it better than brushing putty on flat surfaces? Easier to sand since it's flatter. All right. I don't have a ton of experience with these products. My team has more at this point now. But I've used both products. Swedish putty definitely has a higher solids content. Right? And you're troweling it on, so it's easier on flat surfaces. You have to use a brush to apply it, the brushing putty, hence the brush. And it's, from my understanding, it has a lower solids content, the brushing putty. So if you can trowel, you would rather trowel Swedish because it's, you can trowel it versus brush it. Brush is not going to be as smooth as a trowel, and it's got a higher solids content. That is my quick answer. But yes. Honestly, on flats, yeah, like oil prime, Now, yeah, dude, like definitely thin coats, maybe a little bit of Penetrol in your Swedish putty. I would recommend always buying the Swedish putty in the big buckets, because the little guys, you never want a speck of Swedish putty to dry. So don't put your Swedish putty back in your putty box, in your putty container, right? Because we're trying to lay out super flat finishes, and if one little tiny thing gets in that putty, you get that like groove, that little thing, right? We don't want imperfections in our Swedish putty. So we want to make sure we keep a nice, healthy amount of boiled linseed oil or Penetrol on top of our Swedish putty so that it always stays wet. And then, oh, dude, I got 40 jugs of Penetrol if you want any. I that was one of those products that I ended up buying all the time back in the day when I was using like A100 oil primer. I ended up with like, God, I think I gave a bunch of it away or something. I had like 9 gallons of Penetrol. We don't use Penetrol like ever except for in Swedish putty. So, yeah, I think Swedish putty with a little bit of something, thin coats of Swedish putty with a little bit of Penetrol, a little bit of boiled linseed oil, something like that. That's going to give you a higher build, and it's easier. Obviously, you're going to make it smoother off of a trowel than you are off of a chip brush or really any brush, the brushing putty. The brushing putty, like Phil said, is just really thick primer. So it's good for the details. But both of them are hard to sand. They're not easy to sand. So I'd encourage you to be very careful. And like what happens, I don't remember the first time. I think there's video of it. There's a picture of it someplace way back in the day. I did like pink primer on this metal door at one point, and we Swedish puttied the whole door. And I didn't know what I was doing. And clean up your Swedish putty on your door, on the edges of your panels. Clean that up before it gets dry, because you don't want to have to sand and sculpt a bunch of putty off of the corners of things. That is a pain. So be very smart, and less is more with Swedish putty. What a great, like, how, like, oh, less is more. Oh, I feel like so zen and like I know so much. Saying less is more is annoying, huh? I heard it on some documentary I was watching the other day, and I was just like, oh, that's annoying when people say less is more. But it's freaking true, so whatever. But it is annoying when people say less is more. But but to my point, less is more with Swedish putty. So, dude, I'm losing it, guys. But yeah, I think be very careful with when you use the Swedish putty. But Kendall, if you're still on here, can you tell us what your schedule? Oh, look at that, right on fucking freaking call. As far as schedule, I started with brushing putty and filling, and then moved to primer, maybe 3 coats. And then Swedish putty. I'll probably prime over the top of it since I'm trying to learn the product. There's two schools. We have definitely decided going forwards, we are always going to prime our Swedish putty. It's and I've heard dots on both sides and blah blah blah. And at the end of the day, I like the idea of priming my Swedish putty and sanding that. Because I know what Holonlack looks like and how it goes over oil primer. And I know that when I spray my oil primer over my Swedish and I sand it, I will know if I have 100% oil primer there. And if with the Swedish, you might sand and you might have some inconsistencies of Swedish all the way across. You might not have a full skin of Swedish now, and absorption is different, and like, I don't know, like, I like the idea of oil primer sticking to the Swedish putty, which is finely ground, like porcelain or something. It's finely ground rock of some sort. I forget what it is, but you can polish that up to a freaking high polish if you want. So I like the idea of putting an oil primer on my Swedish. That's like the last uniform thing. Sand that nice and smooth. and then putting top coat over oil primer, because I put top coat over lots of oil primer. I haven't put nearly as much top coat directly over Swedish. And a couple times I have, one of those times I've had an issue. And so, I don't know, at the end of the day, cheap insurance, predictability, I'm going to prime over my Swedish Putty. But I think Phil's not wrong to say that you don't necessarily need to use Swedish if you're going to prime over it. It depends. Like, that's neither here nor there. We'll get there when we get there. We're still dialing in that process of ceilings. But obviously, dude, that's a great schedule. I probably would have started with a coat of primer before brushing putty. Just because it's thinner and it's going to soak in and bite. I trust the adhesive properties of primer more than I trust the adhesive properties of brushing putty. But it's a great schedule. I can't wait to see this door. I hope you don't buff it. You're not going to buff it, are you? No, you're not going to buff it. Kendall, my boy Kendall, he likes the buff. He likes things perfect. Yeah, that's probably good. You have to be careful with the doors. Don't buff your brush door, you nut. Don't do it. Don't set the bar. You want to make Konasigs, fine. You want to make Konasigs and sell Konasigs, that's fine. We're going to keep making Lamborghinis, though. And you can make your $2.3 million Konasig all you want. I was telling someone today, one time we bid the key. My brother's company was bidding, making these custom boxes for Konasig keys. If you guys aren't familiar, Konasig is like this, the supercar of supercars. They're like $2 or $3 million a car. They make like 10 a year. And you can imagine if you buy a $2 or $3 million car, the keys, like a piece of art itself. And they were going to make these high gloss white boxes to put the key in. And we were going to paint them in Hall Black Brilliant. I was really excited about it. And then it just disappeared. They ended up not making the boxes. But I was really looking forward to painting the boxes that Konasig keys were put in. Kendall, either way, I think you know what you... There's so many ways to skin a gloss cat. As the old saying goes, there's so many ways to skin a gloss cat. My man, no buffing, all natural. Is it all natural? I think that's what it is. All natural. He's gonna paint this gloss door all natural. God, that's a weird thing to say. But I love it, man. Who's that door for? I'm curious. Is that for a client or are you doing homework? My man Kendall is a dedicated craftsman. He's working for an awesome company in Dallas doing painting. And this guy took his vacation and he came out to ZK Finishing School to study painting. The man is a student of the game, like all of us are on here, right? There are 20 people right now watching me talk about paint. We're all students of the game. We're all trying to get better all the time. Pat on the back for us. We're awesome. It's good to expand our knowledge and try to get better all the time. I'm a huge fan of it, obviously. We're running out of questions. I started this podcast at 6 o'clock. That was a good call. Yes, see, that's my dog right there. Kendall said he did it for homework. I'm going to show up to the local store that sells FPE and offer to give it to him. Yep, Lou did that. I think the creator of that was actually Chris Polidoro. If my memory serves me, the order of operations was probably Chris did his door first and then inspired us all to want to make stuff. Just to give credit where credit's due. But Lou gave you the idea. That's awesome. Lou's my man. Lou has painted an entire bathroom with gloss before in a paint store. That is a move that we do when we have when we want to do gloss and no one's hiring us to do gloss. I did so many things like that, right? And if you want someone to pay you to do something and you've never done it, you got to start doing it. Generally, that's the way to do that. So I love it. This guy's got a door. Everyone go follow Freezing Fine Finishes. I'm excited to follow along with that door and its process. If you guys have probably saw, some of you may know, we took 180-year-old doors off of a house. No battery. We stripped those doors to bare wood. That was a fun process. Dan and the guys used some chemical stripper, and they used some good old abrasives. And now those doors are primed, and they are hanging back in the openings while we wait for hardware from a fancy hardware place to come in, so that the hinges came in. They had the hinges in stock. Crazy brass hinges. Awesome hardware. And we're just waiting for like the locking mechanism so they can fit these doors perfectly before we go paint them piano black. We don't have a gloss door in the shop right now. I have a number of doors lined up, and I am missing the awesome work that is doing gloss doors right now. I'm sure Dan is too. They're not stressful at all. Although we do have our systems down pretty good. So I'm definitely craving a gloss door in the shop again. oh, yeah, dude. Especially, yeah, so we talked about this weekend. This is a phenomenon that it is a very fascinating human phenomenon. Are any of you familiar with anchoring? The term anchoring and the human psychology term of anchoring and what it means. If you buff that door and you deliver a buff door, the client's now going to be anchored to perfection, right? Well, I think that's going to hurt your sales process, right? When you have to try to convince someone to pay what it costs to do a door so perfect that it's buffed, then you have to convince them to wait the amount of time that it takes to do a door, let it cure, and then buff it. That's a huge, if you want to know the biggest reason why we don't buff doors, right there. Honestly, I think it's a much harder sell to say I need your door for 4 to 5 weeks while I wait for paint to cure before I buff. And you know, let's keep the expectations reasonable. Like, I think sometimes we get too zoomed in as painters knowing what perfect is, and we don't want to. If you're putting a door in a paint store, I don't want to anchor people to truly perfect. Because then all those people who don't want to pay and wait 4 to 5 weeks and pay the extra money for buffing now have seen it, right? They've all test driven a Koenigsegg, but they're in the market for a Lamborghini. Now they don't like their Lamborghini as much. Maybe they just decide not to buy a Lamborghini now because they've already been in a Koenigsegg and it's too fast. And now the Lamborghini is not that fast. And, you don't sit in the middle. Do you sit in the middle in a Koenigsegg? I feel like you do. Yeah, dude, you cannot go wrong with Rembrandt Red. In Texas, I would go Rembrandt Red. I might even go Tulip Red. You Texans like flashy. The rich people in Texas, man, they like to show that thing off. They build these big old houses, and they're like, dude, I got dough. Look at me. It's pretty cool. I like it. You get to do some pretty cool stuff if you're in Texas in the high-end market. New England is definitely a little more, it's definitely much more subtle. I got a lot of money, but I'm going to do it in a more subtle way. I'm not going to be, in general, I think the aesthetic in Texas is bold. So Rembrandt Red, dude, you will never regret Rembrandt Red. Let me show you, oh, my poor brother. I hope he's not watching this. I'm going to show you Rembrandt Red. Yeah, you do need to tap into some of that oil money. That is Rembrandt Red. Oh, look at that. See, these were wrapped. See the little dots? They were wrapped. Someone that I don't know who did it or how it happened, but at some point, I am a horrible brother. I'm going to put that out there right now. Dan, if you're listening, Carney, if you're listening, anyone, we need to get these red frames done for my brother. I love my brother. And two years ago, probably, I promised my brother I would do like four of these picture frames or six pictures. I don't even remember. It's been so long. Dan, we got to do these red picture frames. He's there. I love my brother. And my lack of doing these picture frames is not a representation of my love for my brother. Because this is embarrassing. Somehow I looked at this today. Somehow I have a red picture frame in my shop. And my brother has none. And he gave me these picture frames. And he asked me if I could paint them in Rembrandt red. And I never did. Well, we did. I did. There's pictures on the internet someplace of the process happening. We got pretty far down the process. And then the shop got busy and somebody needed their thing fast. And I don't know what happened. At some point, they even got finished. But then somebody wrapped them up and put them back in their boxes. And they got imprinted. So, my brother, Taylor, I love you. This is not a representation of my feelings for you. But at the end of the day, Dan, we need to figure out all these picture frames here. Oh, you know what the other thing was? The other ridiculous part of this process was we actually shipped out 25 red frames to a client. a well-paying client. And it was so long ago. But somehow these red frames. But if this to the point is, this is beautiful Rembrandt red. Just that's what happens if you put plastic bubble wrap on Holland-Lac, as far as I know, at any time, but at least before it's completely cured, which is like a month before you'd ever want to put plastic bubble wrap on Holland-Lac. But it's got fingerprints on it and whatever, but this is what you get when you come to ZK Finishing School. There's a cool little certificate in there. Honestly, every once in a while, my brother will send me a message, or he'll respond to one of my stories and be like, oh man, it'd be cool if I had some red frames. So I think that we didn't get him red frames, and we're going to get Taylor red frames, because the Poe Toaster, that's his name on Instagram, the Poe Toaster, he needs some red frames, and I have done a horrible job being a good brother and living up to my word. So, the moral of the story is tonight, folks, go to couples therapy, be a better person, don't be like me, and not get your brother something that you told him that you would get him. Let's see. Oh, I have somebody else said something. Not sure of your country. Some door manufacturers here in Australia will not warrant their door if finished in black or similar colors. Yeah. That doesn't surprise me, because there's a door we just did for a guy. The guy made the door, and every single freaking seam on the panel, they took boards and they glued them together to make a panel. Every single seam highlighted, but pronounced. And then like on the rail, it's curved at the joint. You could put your finger in the joint. And it was not a mahogany door. That's why we like to paint mahogany doors. We've never had failures with a mahogany door. People are like, why are you painting mahogany doors? They cost so much. And the client's like, oh my God, that door is so expensive. It costs more than the paint job. But at the end of the day, mahogany is a very stable wood. And the wood that they made these doors out of is clearly not very stable, because there's a bunch of lines in the door. So I can see how if you're not making super stable doors, you don't want black put on them. Because black will heat up that door and will move that wood at a rate that's not going to happen with white. So you do have to be careful with black doors, the sun exposure, how the door is made, and things can get a little bit sketchy with that. That's there. Let's see. All right. I think this has been a good episode. I've enjoyed it. I hope you guys have enjoyed it. It's Sunday night. It's only 7:30. I'm going to go see my beautiful wife and my beautiful dog. And we're going to have a nice evening before we start the week up again. CK Finishing School is a success. Oh, life is good, man. 2020 has been such a good year for everybody, hasn't it? If I see another freaking meme about 2020 being bad, I swear to God, man. Every year has it. Every day, every year has its trials and tribulations, has its adversity. We're human beings. The human condition is striving and overcoming adversity. That's what it is to be human. Life isn't easy. Every year is difficult. Like, what? Like, so COVID happened. It's like, once you label a year bad, like, how is that helpful? I don't know, man. Like, I'm grateful to be alive. I'm grateful to have you guys. I'm grateful to have my team. I'm grateful to have my clients. We're practicing Thanksgiving here. I'm grateful to have my wife. I'm like, oh, man. I try to practice gratitude every day because it just makes life better, right? I'm sure there's some studies that prove if you practice gratitude every day, you feel better and life seems better. And life is better. So I am incredibly grateful to be alive today. 2020, 2021, 2019, whatever. It's a year. Life is good. There's never been a better time to be on a planet, on this planet, than today. Tell me a time in life, a period of time, where you would rather go back to, right? This is the best time by all measures to be alive, by all measures that matter. Life expectancy, violence is lowest it's ever been in the world. You name it. Infant death, infant mortality is low as it's ever been. You know, life is freaking good. And that doesn't mean things don't happen that are painful and that are bad and that bad things, of course, painful things happen. But I really, talking about mindset again, I'm really hesitant to, you'll never hear me with real thought ever blame and broad blanket statement things like 2020 sucks, right? My question is, how is it helpful? In what way does labeling this year as bad help me be a better person? If you can tell me a way, then go for it. But honestly, I don't see how that's a positive mindset to have. I'm going to just focus on what I'm grateful for. I'm going to focus on getting a little bit better tomorrow than I was today. I'm going to focus on the things I can control, and I'm going to keep my mindset positive, because otherwise, God, I'm going to be depressed and I won't want to do anything and I won't want to get any better. And 2020 is freaking awesome, and 2021 is awesome, 2019 was awesome. It's all freaking awesome, right? It feels like, dude, this guy's a broken record. Make it stop. But it's true. Like, self-talk, perspective, it's what we get to, I get to decide how I talk to myself, right? And if I have horrible self-talk, that's on me, right? I can't blame you for my self-talk, right? And if it sucks, I can go to therapy and I can make it better, right? That's the what it is to be human. And we get to decide some stuff. And I would encourage everyone to continue to focus on what they can control. And your mindset and your outlook on things is within your control. It's in your head. You get to decide. And if you can give me some evidence why thinking that the world and this year's not good, or the world's coming to an end, which that's a ludicrous thing to say, right? This is the best time to be alive in the history of freaking mankind. If you give me evidence why saying the world 2020 sucks is beneficial for me, all right, let's have that conversation. But that's a joke. I think anyone can tell you that that's not the way to look at the world. If you want to be a successful person, if you want to be a happy person, if you want to make the people around you happy, right? All of these things, mindset is what we change. So be conscious of it. You get tomorrow when you wake up, you get to decide how you look at the world. I don't get to tell you how to look at the world. Your spouse doesn't. Your kids don't. You get to decide how you see things. Give it a try, guys. Please. And for me, give it a try. tomorrow, think about all the great things that happened in 2020. And say out loud, 2020 has been a great year. That does not mean 2020 has not had adversity. That doesn't mean that people haven't lost their jobs and their business haven't gone bankrupt. That's not... Saying 2020 has been a great year does not mean that bad things haven't happened. But if I believe 2020 is a great year and 2021 is going to be a great year, I might have a little more motivation to go to the gym one more time and do one more rep, or read one more book, or be nice and smile to one more person. That's the kind of stuff I get to decide. If you couldn't tell, I'm pretty passionate about this stuff. I didn't always think this way, right? But I read a lot of books, and they kind of made this stuff pretty obvious. And then the fun thing is, you practice this. Practice thinking that everyone around you is on your side, right? Change that mindset. Think everybody's looking, they're all pulling in your direction, right? Try that optimistic type of approach and watch what happens. You start to be a little happier, right? Nick, go do your chin-ups. I love it. My man Nick, he's always, that guy's positive. Dude, that guy's doing a live show every morning. He's staying in a positive mindset. And magically, things get better. And things get better. And he's going to go do chin-ups now because he forgot. And I had to, I don't know how. Yeah, I was talking about doing that extra rep. You know, I just think we get to decide how we see the world. And if we leave up to ourselves to passively take in what the media and the news might be saying, if I'm a passive ship just blowing in the wind and the media gets to blow on me, right? Then, yeah, life probably does suck if I'm just living my life however the freaking world kicks me. That's where I'm going. But stop for a second. There are things that we get to control. We can control what content you've chosen to touch. This ZK Painting live button and watch me talk. You chose that. You get to choose what content you consume on your ride into work tomorrow. Do you listen to the radio? The radio is just whatever they decide to put on your like, right? The radio is telling you, like, they're playing whatever they want to play, right? Or are you picking the book you want to listen to? Are you picking the podcast you want to listen to that supports positivity and broadens your mindset? And all those things are choices that you get to make. I get to make. If I just passively take whatever the news feeds me, man, I'm just getting kicked around by somebody else's agenda. So listen to books, man. Let's see. Kendall said, listen to books. Two I listened to last week I loved were both Compound Effect and Thinking Upstream. Both were killers. Boom. I've read Compound Effect. That's a tremendous book. I've not read Thinking Upstream, but I'm going to put that on my Audible list. And does every moment of every day, are you ready to take on a nonfiction book and learn? Of course not. Get that. Don't worry, man. If you have a day, there's days where I'm like, I'm going to listen to The Fighter and the Kid. And I don't watch listen to that anymore, but... I'm going to listen to The King and the Sting. That's my guilty pleasure. I love The King and the Sting. Those two guys, Theo Von is my favorite comedian. He's so freaking funny. Some days you're just like, I don't have capacity to take on new information and learn. Okay, fine. Don't learn that day. But when you're ready, when you have that momentum, hopefully you have an audio book queued up. Hopefully you have a book at your bedside queued up for the time when you're ready to go read, right? And you have the momentum. Because we don't always have momentum. I've struggled with depression for plenty of my life. There's lots of times where you don't have momentum. But hopefully you have the book already purchased so that when you have momentum, the book is there. Hopefully you have the audiobook already purchased. Hopefully you have the information at your fingertips to make it easy to consume when you have the minute to think, when you have the momentum, right? And, you know, I don't know, just keep getting a little better every day. I hope some of, I don't know what I'm saying. I, blacked out and just, ranted for the last half hour. But I feel good. I feel good concentrating on the good stuff. I feel good concentrating on the things I can control. You know, I feel good getting a little uncomfortable, going to couples therapy with my wife, and afterwards, hugging her and feeling more connected to another human being than I have in the past. Like, that feels good. So I wish that on all of you as well. You know, because we get to control so many things. Tons of stuff are out of our control. I don't ever want to talk about that stuff. Honestly, I don't want to talk about it. Because I can't control it, and it doesn't help me to focus on things I can't control. In fact, it makes things feel overwhelming and makes me slow down and not actually get stuff done. So instead, when I only think about things I can't control, magically, I end up getting a little bit more done, and I stay a little bit more positive. And I'm going to stop ranting now because you guys didn't sign up to ZK Live to hear this crap. But I hope everybody stays positive. Everybody gets a bunch of stuff done this week. I know I'm going to try to. We've already got a ton of stuff done this weekend. We got a bunch of awesome projects lined up. We have a new apprentice that's crushing it up in Newton. Life is good. Life is good no matter what. Life is good. Because guess what? It's not as helpful to think life is bad, even if things are bad. Life will be better if you think life is good. So do me a favor, everybody. Hashtag life is good. Practice thinking to yourself, life is good. Do we all have downs? Are we all going to have adversity? Yes. But if we see the world through life is good lens versus life is bad lens, I believe we're more likely to do positive things, be a positive impact on the world, and get to a place where less bad things are happening to us, right? So that's my thing for tonight. You guys are all awesome. Thanks for all your questions. Thanks for all your comments. I hope I helped somebody. Somebody just said it helped him with his current situation, man. Like, whatever you're going through, like, it's always going to be okay. Like, we're human. We're the most resilient, dude. Look at us. Look at the bridges we build, the dams we make, the cars we drive. I'm talking to you guys all over the freaking world right now. I'm staring at a freaking little phone, and it's not even plugged into anything. Like, humans are freaking awesome. So even if you're going through tough stuff, like, we'll get through this stuff, man. So everybody have a good night. I'm about to cry. You guys are awesome. I'll see you later.